This is Audible.
Simon & Schuster Audio presents Rebels of Eden, a novel by Joey Graceffa with Laura L. Sullivan, read by Sarah Grayson.
One. Sometimes I think running away is what I do best. As I run through the forest, my bare feet hardly make a sound on the dew-damp leaves. That's not the case with my pursuer. His feet crash like the paws of an infuriated bear, snapping branches and crushing tender new growth. I can hear him cursing. Doesn't matter how fast you run or where you hide. I can smell the city stink on you. You can't escape. This is my home. I shift my pace to leap over a thick trunk of a fallen tree, then remember Mir's advice. Snakes hide under the crevice of fallen trees. If you step or jump too close on the far side, you'll be in perfect range of a strike. Snakes are calm and docile creatures, she added, unlike the malicious serpents many pre-fail humans believed them to be. But if you stepped on me while I was sleeping, I'd bite you, she told me, flashing her teeth so white in her dark, freckled face. With her good advice ringing in my memory, I instead jump on top of the fallen trunk and then leap far clear of any disgruntled rattler. I'd almost rather face the rattlesnake than Xander. He's getting closer, and I clutch the stolen strip of fabric tighter in my fist. I'd rather die than be captured, I think. Then bursts into laughter through my panting breath. I've said that kind of thing before, in much worse circumstances. I meant it then. Somehow my body and brain, recalling those past dangers, feel it even now. It has become second nature to me. I won't yield. Xander will never catch me. He's bigger and stronger than me, far meaner, but I'm lithe and fast. My tireless legs will carry me to salvation. As long as I have the great open earth before me, I'm safe. And then, the earth ends. I should have known. Xander knew. I realize now that he was chasing me here, hurting me. I thought I was running on dewy ground, but of course it's far too late in the day for dew to remain. It burned off hours ago in the strong late summer sunshine. No, the damp leaves were caused by mist from the waterfall. It's swirling around me now, heavy enough to look mystically silver up here on the high elevation. Unfortunately, not nearly thick enough to hide me from my enemy. For he made it clear on my first day in Harmonia that I was his enemy. The place of my birth ensured that before he knew a thing about me. Give it up, city! He won't call me by my name, only insults about my origin. He lords his natural birth over me and the other refugees from Eden. I bear the brunt because I'm the only one near his age. I whirl and face him, the sound of the waterfall raging behind me. I don't want to look at it, not from up here. I've seen it from the bottom, where the rushing water cascades into a rock-lined pool in a never-ending crashing tumult. It is a scary enough force of nature, seen from safe, dry, level land. If I look at it now, I might lose my nerve, and I'll need all the courage I possess to face whatever Xander has in store for me. I'm used to heights, but that just means I know enough to be absolutely sure I don't want to fall off them, or be pushed. When the Ecopan set me free from Eden, and my mother and the others took to Harmonia, I was sure that life in nature must be a paradise. Isn't it what mankind has been awaiting for generations? And in many ways it is. But after 3 months in the wild, I've discovered that people are still people. Whether they are in the city or the forest, no matter if they are trapped or free. Just don't be alone with him, Mira's boyfriend Carnelian once advised me. Easy for him to say. He spends as much time indoors as an Eden resident, tinkering with the small bits of tech we're allowed to help us live harmoniously with nature. Xander hates technology, so it's easy for someone like Carnelian to avoid him. But Carnelian took his passage test last year and got a high ranking. I take the test tomorrow, so I've had to devote all my waking hours to the outdoors, learning how to navigate this strange, wild world. I thought I was doing pretty well, until Xander started in on me. So far, it's just been with cutting words, but I see the way he and his brothers look at the Edenborn. Like we're decadent, corrupt, weak. I'll always be an outsider. Now, standing about 10 feet away, he gives me a slow, malicious grin. I'm trapped, and he can take his time. Hand it over. He extends his hand, as if he's the most reasonable person in the world. I take a tiny step back and shake my head. The small, loose rocks grate worryingly beneath my feet. If I'm not careful, I'll fall before he even decides to push me. No, he couldn't be that terrible, could he? Just because I was born somewhere else? Ecopan chose me for liberation. Shouldn't that make me worthy in his eyes? When I don't hand over the flag, his outstretched hand slowly balls into a fist. Now, he says, before I lose my patience. I just clutch it tighter. This is a picking game. Two teams of athletes, each guarding the flag at their home base, each trying to steal their opponent's flag. It's supposed to be fun, build camaraderie, and train us for life in the wild. An excuse to run, hide, and stalk through the woods. But Xander, his brothers, and his friends have turned it into a war. They never expected an Edenborn girl like me to exceed them in speed and stealth. Now Xander sees it as a direct battle between Eden and Harmonia, a battle he apparently intends to win at any cost. You're going to fail tomorrow, too, he snarls at me. Might as well get used to it today. He's also in the passage test tomorrow. You know I'm going to get that flag one way or another. Tell you what, if you hand it over, I'll only break your arm. How about that, city? With a broken arm, you might squeak by with the lowest passing rank, if your city's scum mother helps you. I catch my breath, and my jaw tightens. Don't you even mention my mother! Until 3 months ago, I thought she was dead, gunned down by Eden Greenshirts as she tried to help me escape to a better life. I was overjoyed to find her alive in Harmonia. She's the most precious thing to me. He ignores me. But if you make me take it from you, I'll break your leg. You won't be able to take the passage test. Maybe not ever if I break it badly enough. You wouldn't, I gasp, overwhelmed by the unfairness of it all. We're supposed to live in harmony here. What have I ever done to you, Xander? He shrugs. Do you ever watch the wolves, city? There's a pack in the mountain range nearby. Sometimes they skirt close to Harmonia, but mostly they avoid us. The elder named Knight took some of us to watch the pack in its den. They work together, sure, but every pack has a leader. The other wolves don't dare disobey him, or... He mimes, slitting a throat, and I wince. But he has never plunged a knife into another human being. He doesn't understand what it really means. I do. Maybe he's all talk. Or maybe he just hasn't had a chance to be as cruel as he is capable of being, yet. When Knight took you, did you see that scrawny little black wolf? Every time another wolf looked at him, he rolled on his back and pissed on his own belly. Do you know why? He came from another pack, kicked out, just like you. The other wolves hate him. He'll always be an outsider. We're a lot like wolves, he goes on. I'm coming in top in the passage test and working my way up from there. Someday I'll be leader, the alpha wolf of this pack. And when I am, I'll make the decisions, and all the corrupt city scum will know their place. Until then, I start with you. He lunges for me, and in that instant I make a split-second decision. Better to choose my own destiny than to let someone else choose for me. I whirl and leap into the roaring, misty void. The glimpse I get of Xander's utter frustration is enough to make me laugh like a lunatic as I fly off the cliff into the waterfall. I know that only adds to his rage, and that makes this suicidal leap almost worthwhile. "It's just a game," my mother's voice seems to whisper to me as I fall. "No," I think. "This is life. Life and death. Everything in Eden, everything out here, has consequences. The smallest decisions matter." But falling and philosophy don't mix. At least not for long. I'm a climber, with skill gained from scaling the high wall that was my childhood prison. Falling is a climber's worst nightmare. But just for a moment, my nightmare is beautiful. In seemingly slow motion, I feel like I'm flying more than falling. The waterfall is lovely and savage, viscerally real, in a way Eden simulations never could be. And I glory in the roaring sound, the chill. Beneath me, in a flash of clarity through the mist, I see my friends and teammates. Vital, dark Mira, like a lithe wild animal. And shy but earnest Carnelian, most visible of all with a shock of orange hair. They're looking up at me, their mouths open, shouting something I can't hear over the surging water. Then time catches up with me, and the beauty becomes terror as I merge with the crashing waterfall. It knocks the wind out of me, blinds me, and I brace for impact on the rocks below, thinking crazily, "We won! I still have the flag!" The landing is terrible, but not as bad as I thought. I miss the rocks and smack with an agonizing thunderclap into the water, but my situation isn't much better. The endless waterfall is pushing me down. I'm stuck in a swirling eddy under its crushing weight. Time and again, I see light at the surface through the swirling bubbles, but I can't reach it. I learned to swim as soon as I got to Harmonia, but all this water is still alien to me. In Eden, all water was precious, rationed, and recycled. Here it is bountiful and wild, and deadly. My lungs are on fire with the ache to breathe. I tumble, disoriented, losing hope, until at last my feet touch the solid, slippery rock below. I shove up with all my strength and burst to a place that is free of the cascade's terrible push. Suddenly, everything around me is calm. The water is clear and still, and I see the silver bellies of fish as they dart away from me. In that moment of peace, everything seems possible, and I smile. I swim to the shore, and my friends are holding out branches for me to grab, making a human chain to pull me to safety. Gasping and shivering, I stagger away from the water's edge. Mira holds me up on one side, Carnelian on the other. "Great Earth," Carnelian says. "Did he push you?" "No," I say with the faintest smile, and hold up the sodden flag, symbol of our victory, and my determination. I jumped. High atop the waterfall, I can just make out Xander's ferocious scowl before he stalks back into the forest. The only good thing about having an enemy is beating them. But somehow I have a feeling that Xander isn't finished with me. Tomorrow, when the passage test begins, he'll have plenty of opportunities. As soon as I catch my breath, we jog back to our base at the edge of the city. It's just a formality at this point, though. We've won. Xander's brothers and other teammates are far behind, and there's no way he himself can get down from the waterfall in time to intercept us. Unless he jumps too, I think, with a stifled giggle. The rest of the team, the ones who'd stayed behind guarding our flag, greet us with cheers, and in a moment I'm swept up with Mira and Carnelian onto their shoulders, reveling in their cheers. It still feels so good to have friends, to be able to go out into the world freely. I spent almost all my life hiding, And when I was finally a member of a community, I wasn't myself, but Yarrow, a programmed product of the center scientists. Bits of her voice come uncomfortably back to me in my head sometimes. "What are you doing with these losers?" spoiled, selfish Yarrow sometimes whispers to me. That subliminal voice makes me deeply uncomfortable, and I have to remind myself that though the programming still lingers in my brain, it isn't me. Because it sure feels like me. In fact, the more she talks inside my head, the more like me she feels. Sometimes there's another little voice too, a low murmur of approval or concern that hardly seems separate from my own conscience. Yet there is an alien quality to it, a fascination that makes me want to both shut it out and listen harder. No matter who is talking in my muddled brain, I make my own choices in this life. I'll never let society's programming dictate right and wrong to me, or a computer's programming. I look at all my friends and smile. The people carrying Mira and Cornelian come together so the happy couple can kiss, and I make myself smile even more broadly to hide the pain seeing their happiness causes me. I've kissed two people, and I love them both. Both of them are trapped in Eden, maybe captured, maybe tortured, maybe with their minds wiped and reprogrammed, maybe dead. Here in Harmonia, they tell us not to think about what we left behind in Eden. That was nothing more than a trial. Those lucky enough to pass now have the whole world in front of them. Look forward, not back, Elder Knight says to the newcomers. Here I have my mom, and a lot of new friends. I have fresh breezes and real rain, plants and rich damp earth, and squirrels frolicking in the trees. The food is authentic, not synthesized from algae. No one is controlling me. I should be completely happy. But I can't stop thinking about those I left behind. Lark, Lachlan, my twin brother Ash, Rainbow and all the other second children. Even strangers, the anonymous people trapped without even realizing they are in a prison. Most citizens of Eden think they live in a sanctuary that keeps them safe from a deadly, poisoned world. All of those people should be free. I said I can't stop thinking about them at all, but I lied. More and more, as the weeks and now 3 months pass, I find myself forgetting about them. First, it would be for a few minutes. I'd be relishing the novel enjoyment of some new fresh fruit, and only be thinking about what a wonderful place the outside was. Only thinking of my own luck, my own pleasure. Later, the forgetting would last longer. I'd be chatting with Mira for hours as we walked in the woods, then go to bed tired and happy. Only when my head hit the pillow would I think of Lark, imprisoned in the center, of Lachlan and Ash, hunted, their whereabouts unknown. Then the guilt hits me. I should be thinking about them all the time. I should be convincing all these natural-borns to help me break into Eden and free the trapped residents. Or if they won't help, I should go myself. Why should I be the one to enjoy the outside just because Ecopan chose me? Then I get lulled by some sport, some friend, by the fascinating agricultural practices by which we grow our food, by some new animal I'd only seen in vids. And for a few moments, I forget again. Mira hops down from our teammate's shoulders and throws an arm around me, hugging me tight. "Well done, Rowan. I'm so glad you joined us in Harmonia." I hug her back and try to fight the sadness that lingers behind all the happiness as we make our way back to the village. I need to keep my head clear. Tonight is the Wolf Moon ceremony. Tomorrow I compete with the other newcomers and those who have just come of age to determine my position in this society. When we're almost to Harmonia, a sweaty and angry Xander blocks our path. He had to be running at top speed to catch up with us and his face is red, his arms scratched by thorns. You're deluded if you think this scum from Eden is anything but trouble for Harmonia, he shouts to the group. Shut up, Xander, Mira snaps. Shut your own mouth, Deadeye's daughter, Xander growls. Mira recoils. Deadeye is a derogatory slang for first-generation people from Eden, referring to the dull, flat color of their lens implants. Mira's eyes are a beautiful, vibrant, honey brown, flecked with gold. Is this just the worst thing Xander can think of to insult her with? Mira is bristling, looking like she's about to hurl herself at him, but Carnelian holds her back, murmuring calming words. We've seen it before, Xander goes on. You know this story is true. Nothing that comes from that stinking city is good. I don't care if Egopan picked her out. If she's the best of the worst, she's still corrupt. But think about it. What if she was clever enough to fool the Egopan? Those city people would stop at nothing to get out here and destroy what we have, just like their ancestors did. A few people scoff at him, but I hear murmurs of agreement, too. Some of my friends look at me with new suspicion in their eyes. I remember from being Yarrow how a charismatic, loud absolutist can sway popular opinion. It happened with Pearl, and it looks like it is happening again now. Rowan isn't dangerous, Carnelian begins in his soft-spoken way. She wanted to go back, Xander says, eyes narrowed at me. If she just wanted to go home, I'd say good riddance, he spits derisively on the ground. But she wants to bring them out. Didn't you hear that when she first came? She wants all that filth to spill into our paradise. They're not like that, I shout back at him. The people in Eden are just like the people out here. We're all human. People from Eden are filth, he sneers. Weaklings at the mercy of technology. Just like you. Just like your mom. I can take him insulting me, but not my mom. I launch myself at him, not liking my odds against his strength and bulk and meanness, but not caring. If I can get one good punch in, I'll be happy. Smash the smugness off that face, and I'll take whatever beating follows. But it's not to be. Mira, Carnelian, and the dozen others with us close around us, pulling us apart. We break into two groups, Xander with the larger contingent, and after a few more shouted curses and threats, the conflict is over. For now. Two. I'm sorry that happened to you, Mira said. Xander is a world-class jerk. Believe me, not all of us feel like he does. Yeah, but some of you do. I heard the others agreeing with him. They think everyone in Eden is somehow subhuman, weaker, less evolved than the people of Harmonia. Sure, we have a lot of technology, but that doesn't make us bad people. How else could we live in a closed system without the efficiencies technology brings? Yeah, but a lot of people here are suspicious of it, Mira says. Not Carnelian. And you have more technology than I first realized. Anyway, Xander doesn't understand. If everyone inside had the chance to live like this, I know they would. Easy there, Carnelian says. You might be right. You know the city people better than we do. But since it isn't going to happen, why worry about it? His words serve to shock me out of a complacency I've slowly, almost unknowingly settled into. I've been seduced by the peace of Harmonia for too long. I can never let myself forget that inside of Eden, a struggle rages, even if the brainwashed victim citizens don't know it. It is a war for their freedom and self-determination, and I have to fight for my family and friends inside. They would do the same for me. If you don't stop worrying about Xander, you're going to be too stressed to do well tomorrow, Mira tells me as we stroll toward Harmonia. We've fallen back from the others, and now we three walk alone. You need something to distract you. Let's do something special. I thought that's what the Wolf Moon Festival tonight is for, I say. Yeah, but that's for everybody. We should do something special. Just us two.
Hey, Carnelian protests.
Why not us three?
You already passed your test last year. You're a grown-up, she says it in a mock solemn voice, as if he's decades older than us instead of just 1 year.
Come on, Rowan. What shall it be? After tonight, we'll have all kinds of responsibilities.
We'll have, jobs. I'm actually pretty excited about getting my job after the test tomorrow.
Life in Harmonia is idyllic. With no money, no conflict, and an abundance of food, most people's workday is down to about 2 or 3 hours of absolutely necessary tasks. Some of it is tedious, the household and community tasks we used to assign to the bots inside Eden. Cleaning, tidying, refuse collection and recycling, and building maintenance. Other things are more interesting. Gardening, gathering, textile work, and cooking. I found I have a knack for cooking. In Eden, all of our food was either created from algae grown in skyscraper-like urban farms, or chemically synthesized proteins, carbohydrates, and fats. Everything was ready-made in factories, or assembled swiftly and efficiently by domestic bots, so there was no real need to cook at home. I thought everything tasted pretty good back when I was still a prisoner in Eden. Then I came here. Oh, great Earth. When I think of those poor people in their desert-ringed prison, knowing nothing but the artificial taste of synthetic strawberries, it makes me want to cry. For my first real meal in Harmonia, Mira, then unknown, just a friendly face, brought me a dish of oats topped with the tiniest, sweetest wild strawberries. It made everything I'd eaten so far in my life suddenly taste like dust. With real ingredients, grown in our own gardens, harvested wild from trees, cooking was a pleasure. Mira and some of the older women taught me how to use the communal solar cookers, and I always volunteer to help whenever I can. But it is the other jobs that really pique my interest. Harmonia may seem like a truly natural place, with its orchards and gardens, but there is technology here too, mostly subtle and hidden. When Ecopan first released me from Eden, when I awoke in that flowery meadow on the edge of the forest and was greeted by my mom and a few other representatives from Harmonia, I was practically hysterical. Insisting that they help me get back in to rescue Ash, Lark, Lachlan, and the others. They're just right over there, I kept shouting, pointing across the meadow to the scorching desert, beyond which the thicket of giant synthetic bean trees were a smudge on the horizon. If we get the right equipment, maybe we can get back inside. At least send them a message. Let them know the outside world is alive and ready for them. Oh, how I ranted and pleaded with them. They were patient with me at first, but after I broke away and tried to run back into the desert, they tranquilized me. I remember being carried, a sense of almost imperceptible movement. And then I was in Harmonia. I had no real idea how I traveled, or how far. Once in Harmonia, I couldn't settle down. How could I be happy when loved ones were still in Eden? How could any of the outsiders be content when their fellow humans were imprisoned and experimented on? I found sympathy, but no help. The natural-born outsiders couldn't see how I could think about going back, even to help my friends. You earned your way out. They didn't, I was told. They seemed to think the residents of Eden were some kind of subhuman, base and unworthy. People in Harmonia didn't like to talk about Eden at all, except as an object lesson. That's what we will be forced into if we ever cease to respect the Earth, they said. If we can't be self-governing and respectful, we'll have to be prisoners. Even those few who Ecopan had freed from Eden seemed to have no real desire to help their friends and family stranded inside. They just seemed grateful to be free themselves. I didn't let that stop me. No one would tell me where Eden was, so every time I went out, I explored as far as I could. I found no signs of it. As far as I knew then, it could be 10 miles away, or thousands. I had no way of knowing. The elders put up with it for a while. It was usual in newcomers, but after I ran away for 2 days seeking any signs of Eden, they put me in intensive counseling to help me get over what they called my unnatural obsession with my damaged past. It was a form of psychosis, the counselors told me. Maybe they didn't put wires in my brain. Maybe they didn't change my vision so I couldn't see the truth or implant new memories. But I could see the intention was fundamentally the same. Accept the way things are now, or else we make life here very unpleasant for you. No one ever spelled it out. There are no formal laws in Harmonia. For the most part, there don't need to be. There is plenty for everyone, and it is such a close-knit community that everyone would know instantly if someone stole. The rare conflicts are quickly settled by the elders. Yet it was implied that some kind of punishment would certainly await me if I didn't give up on my quest to return to Eden for my friends. So, after a struggle, I now play along. Enjoy being one with the environment. Forget everything that happened to you, the people you left behind. Be a good little member of our idyllic society. I've had a taste of utopia before, and it wasn't as perfect as it appeared. Now, cracks in Harmonia are showing. Still, it is far, far better than Eden, and my friends should be here. I remember something that Xander said. What did he mean, we've seen it before? What story was he talking about? It didn't sound like he was just talking about 1,000 years ago, when humans almost destroyed the environment. Mira and Carnelian exchange a look. We're not supposed to talk about it, Carnelian begins.
Well, it's not so much that,
Mira says.
More like no one wants to talk about it, Carnelian concludes.
So we don't. It happened a long time ago. I wait, and finally, reluctantly, she tells me. It was when my parents were about our age. Someone came to Harmonia. Someone from Eden.
We don't know that, Carnelian interjects.
Where else could he have been from? Anyway, we didn't get notice from Ecopan, so we're guessing he crossed the desert somehow. We found him one morning wandering in a field nearby, and took him in. We fed him, gave him clothes, and then that night... She breaks off, swallowing hard. What happened? I prompt. He killed the family he was staying with. The parents, the grandparents, the 3 children in the household. He used some kind of gun that dissolved part of their bodies. It was terrible. Only 1 member of the family was spared. A young man who was out all that night courting his sweetheart. In the morning, he found them, and the outsider was gone. I don't even know what to say. How could someone do something like that? Why would someone cross the desert, find this wonderful place, and then commit such a terrible crime? There's something else you should probably know, Mira adds. The young man who wasn't killed along with his family was Xander's father. So Xander grew up with stories about someone from Eden killing his ancestors? No wonder he hates people from Eden. Whoever did that was a psychopath, though. Or maybe they had been reprogrammed. I don't know, but how can he really think people in Eden are all like that? I just know that it affects him deeply, Mira says. He hates everything from Eden, and he hates technology. So, watch your back. I'm silent for a moment. Then Mira says brightly, enough of this. You need a distraction. I know what we can do. What? Both Carnelian and I ask simultaneously. Not you, love. You have to work. This is just for Rowan. Carnelian sighs dramatically and says, work. No rest for the wicked. Mira throws her arms around him and kisses him. I know you love your job, so don't expect any pity from me. And maybe after the passage test, I'll make up for it by... She whispers something in his ear that makes him blush.
On that note, you ladies have fun, and I'll see you tonight.
He leaves with a huge grin on his face. So, I ask when we're alone, where are we going? She smiles at me knowingly.
You haven't been here long, so there are a few secrets you haven't learned yet.
Secrets? I ask eagerly.
Just wait, you'll see.
I get excited as she changes course and leads me away from Harmonia. Although logic tells me she's not talking about anything that might help my plan, I can't help but feel a sense of anticipation as I'm let into each detail about my new home. Anything could prove to be the clue that will help me achieve my goal of getting back to Eden. We walk through a trackless forest. A couple of times she stops, checks the angle of the sun, and backtracks before resuming her course.
I don't come here often, she explains. I don't want to risk anyone else finding out.
Why? I asked.
It's nice to have a place that's just for yourself, isn't it?
Ah, here we are. We're standing in front of a dense tangle of rhododendrons. I know these plants, large shrubs or trees, tend to grow in a tight, impenetrable thicket. As Elder Knight said when teaching Mom and me, if you come across rhododendrons, go around, not through. People have gotten so stuck and disoriented in rhododendron thickets that they've actually had to be rescued.
Now, turn around and close your eyes.
I do, and I hear the rustle of foliage, then to my surprise, the clink of metal, and what sounds like a latch unlocking.
You can look now.
I turn and see her dark, freckled face, peering out from the bushes, a frizz of her hair snagged on a branch. She beckons me, excited, conspiratorial, and she reminds me of Lark. I feel my throat tighten as I remember the abandoned tower Lark took me to. Her special hideout, where she could think her own thoughts, dream her own dreams. Mira holds the branches aside for me as I step through. There's a stone wall with a door fashioned out of some unknown material. I'm tingling with excitement. Can this be some secret that will help me with my plan? As soon as I'm inside, I forget about my scheming, lost in the wonder of absolute beauty. Mira has taken me to a secret garden. Hidden behind the double fortress of rhododendrons and walls, the garden is open to the sunlight above and holds the most miraculous collection I can imagine. Even the nightclubs of Eden, with their fake flowers in neon colors, couldn't compare with this spectacle. I grew up with steel and concrete and synthetics. I am still in awe over a blade of real grass. Imagine how I feel seeing more species of plants in one small space than I've seen so far in all of Harmonia.
What is this place? I ask in amazement.
I'm not sure, but it's old. Really old. Prefail? She shrugs. Maybe, but look, there are plants growing here that don't grow anywhere in the forest. Things I've never seen in the wild. It's true. There are exotic, delicate blossoms, fragrant buds that don't look like they'd survive in the forest or fields. This garden was made just for pleasure, I say. Just for the love of plants, of beauty. Strange as it may seem, this goes against the beliefs of Harmonia. We're supposed to live in harmony with nature as much as possible, not control it. We don't have livestock, even for milk. No domestic bees for honey, only wild ones. No pets. And though we grow vegetables and fruit, we don't have any gardens that aren't specifically useful. They have edible plants or medicinal ones. Growing something just because it is pretty is frowned upon. I find that very strange. Why wouldn't beauty be as important as food? But I'm still learning all the ways of Harmonia. Mira pulls me in deeper. I see white statues of elegant figures,
Slim girls, boys with cloven hooves, a timid gazelle. A lizard with a blue tail crawls sinuously across one of the statues. Jewel-colored beetles crawl and buzz from plant to plant. There's a fountain in the center, with a statue of a man sculpted in marble. He holds one hand out in benediction, but the other is curled in a fist. It almost looks like part of the sign of the seed, the gesture we make inside of Eden, to remind us about the magic of life, of what we lost. But it also looks like a threat. Or maybe like someone clutching something possessively to their chest. I can't be sure. The marble man is tall, lean, with the most benevolent eyes that seem to follow me. With a gasp, I realize who it is. Aaron Elbaz! Mira follows my gaze. Really? I thought it must be a famous horticulturalist, whoever designed the secret garden. You've never seen a picture of him? She shakes her head. They have a library, with both written and digital records, but most things are taught orally, the wisdom passed down through stories and demonstration. Harmonia kids don't sit in classrooms. Well, no wonder his garden is so well taken care of, she says. The fountain is pristine, just like the rest of the garden. The water in the fountain bubbles and gushes in decorative splashes in an algae-free pool. Through some trick of engineering, Aaron Elbaz seems to walk on water, unsupported. I turn away, seeing that vile man who killed so many people, and who continues to delude so much of humanity centuries after his death, fills me with disgust, and taints even this beautiful place. Still, it is indeed beautiful, and I look at the flowers instead. You do all the work? I ask. She grins, a gleam in her eye. Look closer at the bugs. I peer at the tiny walking and flitting jewels. At first, they seem like regular beetles. Then I notice the uniformity of their movements, and the fact that they seem to be working. Not just eating or protecting their territory, or the things that insects normally do. No, these little bugs are tidying up. I watch one prune a dead leaf. When it drifts in a gentle zigzag to the ground, another beetle is waiting to grind it into tiny bits so it can more easily join the soil. Azure water bugs pluck detritus from the fountain and scour the sides. They're bots, I gasp, and she nods. I didn't think this kind of technology was allowed in Harmonia. The elders are always talking about the need for labor, to appreciate the responsibility of being stewards of the environment. They say that if bots can take care of things, we'll take them for granted. I puzzle over it as I walk around the garden, marveling at the beauty around me. No one else knows about it. What would the elders do if they knew? Would their beliefs in keeping nature unfettered make them destroy this place? I understand that Harmonia has certain rules for a reason. I mean, we humans mess things up pretty badly before. But how strict are they? What would the elders do to keep their laws intact? No one knows, not even Carnelian. My father and I found this place, and this was our special spot. We didn't even tell my brothers and sisters. I'm the youngest, you see, and Dad knew I always felt a little like the others got the best of everything. He made sure this was a place just for us, something that made me feel special. She sniffs and pushes her hair back from her face. I know her father died just a year ago. Then why did you tell me now? I ask, curious. She takes a deep breath. Well, part of it is that you're hurting, more than I've ever seen anyone hurt before. People here tend to be happy. Even when my father died, it was the most awful thing in my life, but it was a part of the natural order, you know? It tore me apart, but I don't know if I'm explaining it right. We live, we die. We rejoice when a baby is born, and we mourn when someone dies. It is part of nature, the endless cycle, and that makes the pain somehow easier to bear. Like when winter comes, we miss summer, but we understand what is happening. The pain you feel, though,
she breaks off as she struggles to understand what I've been through. I've told her a lot, but not everything. I think you'd be happy here, being free from Eden. You have nature, your mom. In a way, I am happy. I believed that Mom had sacrificed her life to save me. But Ikapan was so impressed at her dedication in keeping me safely hidden for 16 years and her determination to give me a real life beyond our courtyard that it plucked her from near death. Mom told me how she'd lain bleeding on the street. Certain death was only moments away. She remembered a green shirt kicking her in the ribs with his boot, saying, "She's not gonna make it. Load her up," while another hauled her up and threw her painfully in the back of a robot transport. "I'm still alive," she tried to tell them, as the bay door shut on her and the transport lumbered toward the morgue. She told me about the shock of having been shot, really shot, in the first place. The green shirts usually used stun weapons. She couldn't believe they considered her crime of hiding a second child to be worthy of lethal force. Chief Elena must have issued new orders around then, authorizing deadly force to anyone accused of that crime. She must have been starting to experiment on the second children. "Then suddenly the vehicle disintegrated," Mom told me, "and she was enveloped by a swarm of tiny silver bots that encased her in a sphere. When she woke up, she was lying in grass, and Elder Knight and a few others from Harmonia were waiting for her." "But you aren't happy. Even though you keep up such a good front that the elders and even your mom believe you are. And it troubles me deeply to see you like this. When I think of the things you've told me that go on in Eden, it fills me with pain too. And anger. You left people you loved behind. Will you tell me about them? I know about your brother. But there must be someone else special to make you so heartbroken and bereft." "There was someone back in Eden," I admit. "Two someones, really." She sits down on a bench in the shape of a giant tortoise. "Tell me." I've mentioned them before. I've told her the story of my life, more or less, all the events leading to my escape from Eden. But I left out a few crucial details. They were still too painful, and frankly, too confusing to talk about. But now, the combination of this peaceful garden and Mira's friendly interest make me feel more inclined to open up. "I'm guessing one of them must be Lachlan," she says, and I nod. "He sounds insufferable and irresistible." "Yeah, that about sums him up. He's the strongest person I've ever met. If there's a hard thing to do, he'll do it. He puts everyone else before himself. He would have died to save the second children. Maybe he has." I wipe a tear away that falls down my cheek. "He's stubborn, too, and won't always listen to reason." "Sounds like a good match for you." "But in his tender moments, the few times he's opened up, I don't know. I see the person he could have been if he'd been born into a peaceful world. An artist. A father, anything but a fighter. I think he hates all the things he's had to do to survive." "And you love him?" "I do," I admit. "But then there's Lark." Mira's eyebrows go up. "The girl with the lilac hair?" "Of course she's featured prominently in my stories, too." "She definitely loves you. From what you've told me, she'd stop at nothing to save you." I've told Mira how Lark infiltrated Oaks to reach me, but I made it sound more like she was helping the underground than trying to help me. I guess I didn't fool Mira. I feel like I've known her all my life. She's Ash's best friend, and when I had to hide all my life, I lived on stories he would tell me about her. When I finally met her in person, the connection was magical, electric. She has this open heart, this goodness about her. She really believes in a better world and would do anything to achieve it. Mira is silent for a moment. There's nothing wrong with loving them both, you know.
It means someone has to be hurt, I tell her, gently stroking the pale pink petal of an extravagant blossom. And whatever I choose, I'm going to be hurt too. Because either way, I'll be losing one of them. And that would devastate me. I look up at her suddenly. Listen to me, talking like it matters. I'll never see either of them again. She looks at me strangely. And that's why I brought you here today. I don't understand. I want you to trust me, she says. I do, of course. I mean with everything. And that's why I brought you to the most special secret place I know. Shared with you the one thing I haven't told anyone else. Not my mom, not the love of my life, Carnelian. Because I need you to know that I can be trusted. With what? Your secret. She waits, but I just look at her, taking care to keep my expression blank. You're planning something, Rowan. I know it. You're not the kind of person to feel all that pain and anger and not do anything about it. I don't answer, and she presses me. Does it involve getting back into Eden? I almost slide off the bench. I try to answer, but can't make anything coherent come out. Come on, I have eyes and a brain. I've seen other people who are set free from Eden, and none of them acted quite like you. They had survivor's guilt, maybe. They missed their families and made a big show about wanting to go back for them, but you could see in their eyes that they were relieved to be free, once they realized they'd been in a prison. After a while, people learned to forget about the loved ones they left behind. Even your mom, and she was one of the worst. Almost as bad as you at first. But logic prevailed, and she gradually realized that there was no real hope of getting you out. Oh, don't feel mad. She told the elders she was pretty sure you were dead anyway. I mean, a teenager alone with a whole city after her? What chance did you have? Like I said, she and the others gave up, but it's a gradual process. Not with you. What do you mean? I ask, playing for time, trying to figure out my lies. You were a wildcat when you first got here, screaming, crying, running away until they had to sedate you. You begged everyone in Harmonia to help you get back to your brother and friends and the second children. And then, all of a sudden, like magic, it was like you stopped caring about the people you left inside of Eden. Like all that passion and caring just got switched off. I didn't believe it for a second. Maybe I just saw the logic about giving in, like my mom did. No way. I haven't known you very long, but I can tell what you're like. You have two people you love in there, plus your brother, and a ton of second children you consider part of your family. I know for a fact you haven't given up on going back to Eden and getting them out. You just decided it was better to be sneaky about it. I study her face. Are you going to tell anyone? Mira doesn't answer my question, but says suddenly, I wish you had known my father. The things you tell me make me think of him. He was from Eden. I am completely stunned. So that's what Xander meant when he called her Deadeye's daughter. I had no idea. And you never thought to tell me? I couldn't, she says. I mean, you still don't understand how they feel about Eden here. They just barely acknowledge that it exists. My dad would never even talk about it. I only know because... She breaks off. And I have to press her to go on. No one knows. Just Carnelian and my brothers and sisters, of course. My dad brought something from Eden. For a second, I hope it might be some kind of technology. Something that can help me get back into the city and help my friends. What she tells me is even more surprising. He brought amazing fighting skills out of Eden. He wouldn't talk much about it, but... I get the impression that my dad was very poor in Eden. That he must have lived in what you call the outer circles. He said people had to fight to survive. His family in particular were professional fighters. People would bet on the victor. His fighting kept his family from starving. I've heard about such things in the outer circles. Barbaric blood sports. But poverty can make people do disgraceful things. He wouldn't tell me very much about Eden, no matter how much I asked. But he did teach my siblings and me how to fight. Most of them weren't very interested, but I took it very seriously.
That seems strange in a pacifist society, I tell her.
I know, she laughs. But maybe it was just because he could never tell me about his past. I always kind of felt that there was more to my life than just a quiet existence in Harmonia. That even in this paradise, there would be something to fight for. Now that I finally have some of the answers to my questions about Eden, things he would never tell me, I think I know why I always had that urge to fight. I've never seen you fight, I say.
I know. Who is there to fight?
I practice on my own. Sometimes I make Carnelian partner with me. No one else knows. You'll keep it a secret, right?
Oh, I'm great at keeping secrets, I assure her.
The things you've told me about life in Eden also make me think about how my father died. She tells me how he developed a degenerative nerve disease, so that her once powerful father slowly diminished before her eyes. The healing herbs of Harmonia could do nothing for him. Eventually, he couldn't walk. Then he lost his ability to speak. But his mind was as keen as ever, and it tormented me to see that brave, intelligent man trapped in his prison of a body. She's weeping silently now, speaking through her tears. There was nothing I could do for him. I felt so powerless. I would have climbed any mountain, fought any foe to save him. But there was nothing to fight. When you tell me about the people of Eden, trapped in their prison through no fault of their own, or about people whose entire personalities are taken from them, like yours was, it makes me want to fight. To do for them what I couldn't do for my own father. To break down the prison walls that keep people from being free, their true selves. I couldn't fight a disease. I can fight a government. She sniffs back her sorrow. Rowan, I know you want to rescue them, and I'm going to help you. Three. What are you talking about? I ask, astonished at what Mira just said. I want to help you, she repeats. Whatever you're planning, let me be a part of it. I'm immediately suspicious, and I hate myself for it. Mira has been nothing but open and friendly, but I've spent too much time with people who aren't what they appear. What if she's just trying to catch me? What if she secretly thinks like Xander, that the ills of Eden have to be forever contained behind the scorching desert? She's seemed so accepting of me, but what if it is all an act? I search her face for signs of deception, but find none. The elders made it clear that it is against the law for me to go back to Eden, I remind her. We're not even supposed to talk about it. If Elder Knight thought we were scheming to go to Eden, she'd... I don't even know what she'd do. There's no jail in this peaceful village. No law enforcement. No law at all beyond the wisdom of the elders. We might be locked in a house for a while, given calming drug tea like when I was first frantic to escape. But nothing truly bad would happen to us. Would it? I've been thinking about it ever since you arrived, Mira said. There were other people Egopan set free before you, of course, but none of them had stories like yours. They talked about living good lives, honoring the memory of the fertile earth. They talked, at first, about the things they missed. The lights, the music, the excitement. And the things they didn't miss, like the crowds, the pressure to succeed, the long work days, the one-child limit. But it didn't sound too terrible. Even when your mom came, I didn't realize. She was depressed for a while after she arrived. She didn't want to talk much about what happened. But I told her stories that opened her eyes. After hearing what you went through, what the people in the center did to you, to everyone there, it made me sick. I couldn't imagine someone living in my brain, monitoring me all the time. And bots everywhere, spying. I couldn't believe that Eden actually had slums, that there were people without enough to eat living on the streets.
it started to make me disconnected with my own wonderful life here. Like you said, how could I be happy when so many people are